Last year, there was a book published called The New Rules, Internet Dating, Playfairs, which is a play on the word affairs, and Erotic Power, written by a lady called Catherine Hakim, who's a British social scientist. And in this book, Ms. Hakim argued that the rise of the internet, which has made it easier for people to find new lovers, has brought about a change in sexual behaviour on a par with the invention of the contraceptive pill. In her view, adultery is simply the 21st century approach to marriage. In her opinion, adultery can actually be good for a marriage. Now, the concept of open marriages has been talked about by more and more people these days. But this way of thinking stands totally at odds with the biblical view of what constitutes wisdom and proper behaviour. Solomon tells us quite clearly in Proverbs chapter 5, verse 8, that we need to steer clear of adultery. Speaking from the male perspective, Solomon tells us that men need to avoid crossing paths with a woman who is married to someone else. Keep your distance, he says. Don't approach the door of her house. But to be clear about all of this, we need to ask the question, what is adultery? Now, the word adultery in English comes originally from a Latin word which has the idea of defilement. In English, we normally use the word adultery to indicate when a married person cheats on their husband or wife. Now, in the Old Testament, adultery was primarily thought of as involving a man having sexual relations with a woman who was either engaged or married to someone else. And we also need to keep in mind what the marriage customs back then were, for they're a little bit different from today. For us in 21st century Australia, marriage is basically defined by the state. In Australia, to get married, you normally have to be at least 18 years of age, not married to anyone else, to be the opposite sex of the person you want to marry, not closely related to the person you want to marry, and willing to agree to the marriage as indicated by your consent through signing a marriage certificate. But the state's definition of marriage may not be God's definition of marriage. If our society, for example, ever changes the law to allow same-sex marriage as some people want, then the difference between God's definition of marriage and our human definition of marriage will be obvious. In the Bible, whether a ceremony is involved beforehand or not, marriage, from God's point of view, basically starts when a sexually mature man and woman, that is, a man and a woman who have reached puberty, form a one-flesh relationship through sexual union. In Exodus 22, verse 16, the law states that if a man slept with an unmarried girl, then he had to pay the bride price and take the girl to be his wife, unless the girl's father didn't agree to that. In other words, we see in the Bible that the obligation of faithfulness goes together with the sexual act. This means that if an unmarried boy and girl sleep with each other, from God's perspective, they are effectively husband and wife. And if one of them in the future were to form a relationship with someone else and sleep with that person, then this would be to break the bond of the one flesh relationship that's already been formed. And doing so would constitute a kind of unfaithfulness, a kind of adultery. So, from the biblical perspective, we're not to think that just because we're unmarried, we're free to sleep around. That view of things is totally unbiblical. Of course, all of this sounds old-fashioned to modern ears, doesn't it? These days, you don't need to go far to come across people who actually promote adultery as a legitimate lifestyle choice. There's one dating website that advertises, "Life is short, have an affair." Now, the owner of this website says that he's a happily married man of two children who isn't into cheating himself. He exonerates himself from the charge of promoting adultery by saying that his website is just a service for people who have already made their own decision to cheat on their partner. It's not as if his website is trying to convince them. And this dating service also claims to have close to 18 million members worldwide. Growing up in this day and age, such websites might seem commonplace. But really, when you look at things like that, you've got to say it's outrageous, honestly. The fact of the matter is that adultery is deadly serious, which means that living as a Christian in today's society isn't easy. In our highly sexualized society, where avenues for infidelity abound, it's difficult to stay focused and to have the right thinking in our heads when it comes to sexuality. And sometimes you might not even be looking for it, but there it is, staring you in the face. Now, I sometimes watch soccer games online. And there's one website that has pop-ups that are hard to avoid. You can't stop them popping up. Now, most of the ads are harmless. But as you try to get rid of them, every so often, it'll be an ad about Russian women who are just looking for a good time and dressed appropriately, which is basically totally inappropriate when it comes to the purpose of promoting faithfulness within marriage. When you think about it, how many women are out there advertising their attributes, showing off their beauty, their lips dripping with honey and speaking nice sounding words? And how many blokes actually like it that way and play the field, often with the attitude, the more the better? Now, Solomon, speaking from the man's perspective, tells us that the lips of an adulteress, a woman who belongs to someone else, might seem to be sweet, but in the end, her end is as bitter as wormwood and as sharp as a double-edged sword. Now, wormwood, for those who don't know, is a name for the plant absinthium, whose leaves and flowers contain a bitter flavour, and some people make forms of alcohol out of it. Adultery might seem sweet, but in the end, it turns to bitterness. That beautiful woman who isn't yours, she might be attractive. She might be calling you to have a bit of fun together, but her lipstick is poison, and her feet are going down to death. That kind of lifestyle is the pathway to hell. And the implication is that the bloke who visits an adulteress is himself in going down to the same place with her. Now, Solomon gives us other reasons as to why adultery is to be avoided. In verses 9 through 10, Solomon warns us that adultery impoverishes the adulterer. The adulterer ends up expending energy and fathering children, if any children are born as a result, not for his own family, but for someone else's family. There are possible financial implications, maybe even blackmail, where you end up paying off the other person involved. And then there's the regret that often accompanies such behaviour, the possibility of social embarrassment, and the certainty of eventual judgment by God. All in all, it's not worth it. Are you willing to exchange your soul for a few minutes of pleasure? Instead of being tempted by adultery, Solomon strongly advises us that the proper outlet for any sexual drive that we might have is with our husband or wife. Speaking once again from the male perspective, Solomon says in verse 15 that we're to drink water from our own cistern, to drink running water from our own well. Here, the wife is pictured as a well that the husband is to drink from. If you want to do it, then do it with your wife. Here we see that in God's plan, the only legitimate outlet for sexual activity is with your husband or wife. In verse 16, Solomon asks the question, should your springs overflow outside in the street or in the public square? Is it right for a bloke to inseminate women who don't belong to him? The seed that males produce in the sexual act is meant to be for building up their own family, not the family of others. Instead of spraying things around willy-nilly, your efforts are to be focused on your wife. She's the one that should be blessed. She's the one that you should rejoice with, the wife of your youth, the girl that you took to be your wife when you were younger. She's the one that you're to have fun with. Now, Solomon goes on to describe a man's wife in terms of a lovable doe and a graceful ewe. The ideal is that the husband is attracted to his wife and finds intimacy with her. And this intimacy is further developed in a striking way in verse 19, when Solomon says, "May her breasts fill you at all times. May you be intoxicated with her love always." Now, normally when we think of women's breasts, we think of them as filling babies with milk. But it is a scientific fact that regular stimulation of the female breast produces milk, even in women who aren't pregnant. It's the way that God has designed things. And I guess Solomon knew something about this biological possibility. But all of it is a picture of how a man is to be satisfied by the body of his wife and intoxicated with her love. All of this in God's plan is only natural, and it's a wonderful thing according to God's design for marriage. So here we see that Solomon is saying a number of things that are important for us today. He's saying that the proper place for the expression of sexual love is between a husband and wife. But he's saying more than that. He's also saying that ideally, the husband and wife should enjoy an intimate relationship with each other, an important part of which is sexual closeness. Engaging in sexual activity with one's husband or wife on a regular basis, where both people end up feeling satisfied, strengthens the one flesh relationship between husband and wife. And friends, what Solomon is saying here is consistent with what we see elsewhere in the scriptures. The Apostle Paul teaches in 1 Corinthians 7 that people who have sexual desires should get married, and that within marriage, the husband and wife shouldn't deprive each other of sexual contact. So for those of us here today who are married, this is an important reminder that sexual intimacy matters. Now, it's true that sometimes the husband has more of a sexual drive than the wife, but sometimes the reverse can also happen. Whatever the case, it's important that married couples pay attention to each other's needs for sexual intimacy. If your sex life isn't satisfying, then there's something wrong. And here we should realise that a strong marriage where sexual intimacy exists, this is a strong deterrent against adultery. There are lots of temptations out there in the world. So couples can actually help each other to stay focused by making sure that there is regular intimacy with each other. So if you're married, don't neglect your spouse. And I think this is also particularly relevant in the world in which we live. We've been talking so far today about the danger of literal or physical adultery. But what about virtual adultery? Remember what Jesus said about adultery. Jesus taught that even if a man is to look at a woman lustfully, that already is a kind of adultery. Just desiring someone who isn't your husband or wife has adultery. Jesus' teaching is difficult in a world where people flaunt their flesh and pornography is readily available online. All of us would probably say that we wouldn't dare physically sleep with anyone who wasn't our husband or wife. But what about the problem of virtual adultery? What about the issue, for example, of pornography? Is it possible to look at pornography without desiring the flesh on display? I would say that it's very difficult in most circumstances for pornography not to lead to lustful thoughts. And what you end up doing in most instances is you end up lusting after a man or a woman there on the screen who is already in a one flesh relationship with someone else. And here we should also remember that the whole point of pornography is that it's designed to provoke sexual desire in the viewer. So the issue of virtual adultery is very real for us today. One of the issues for younger people who have reached puberty is that they have a sexual drive. How do they control that sexual drive? Paul's advice is very clear, basically. If you can't control yourself, then you should get married. He says, for it's better to marry than to burn with passion. If you're unmarried and have a problem controlling your sexual desire, then why torture yourself trying to fight the desires that are in large part a natural urge that God has given you? If you've got sexual desires, then you need to seriously think about getting married sooner rather than later. Watching pornography or sleeping around isn't the solution. And then there are those who are already married, yet who also fall into the trap of watching pornography, or who end up sleeping with someone who's not their spouse. Why do some people do that? It's often because their need for sexual fulfillment isn't being met in some way or other. To be honest, sometimes it's because the sexual side of the relationship with their husband or wife isn't good. If you have something good which satisfies you, then the need to look elsewhere is minimised. And if the relationship isn't good, this is where the husband and wife need to work at developing a more fulfilling kind of sexual intimacy within marriage. But having said that, it's also true that sometimes people engage in literal or virtual adultery simply because they're sinful and don't understand the importance of faithfulness within marriage, no matter how caring their spouse may have been. Whatever the case, all of us need to remember that from God's perspective, adultery is a deadly, serious problem. In verse 21, it reminds us that the Lord sees everything. He knows what we're doing. He knows what we're thinking. And engaging in adultery or unfaithfulness is to start walking down the pathway of wickedness, leading to the possibility of eternal death. So whether it's literal adultery or virtual adultery through improper thoughts or straying eyes, we need to deal with it. We need to take this seriously and seek to do better. The key is to find sexual fulfillment in the husband or wife that God has provided us with if we're married, or in the husband and wife that God will provide us with in the future if we're still single. Now friends, sexuality is meant to be an area of enjoyment and satisfaction. It's meant to be something which is good for us, something which establishes bonds of intimacy between the husband and wife. But so often it ends up being an area of pain and guilt. It shouldn't be that way. Let's pray, therefore, that in God's strength And as he gives us wisdom, we'll commit ourselves to avoiding the sin of adultery. I hope that for those of you who are married or who will be married, that sexuality will be an area of enjoyment and satisfaction for you rather than pain and failure.